good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. It's a Tuesday episode of the podcast, which means we are talking everything college football. Ben and I are going back. We're looking at the schedule that was in college football this past weekend. We're going to talk about some of the results, some of the potential college football playoff implications, which comes out today, right? I mean, technically, when this podcast comes out, that will be the day of the first college football playoff ranking.
Prediction, go.
Wild that we are.
Don't be wrong.
You gotta build it up to this. You can't give it to people right away.
Do it.
I mean, I guess technically they already downloaded the podcast. So say Alabama's one, Notre Dame is two, Ohio State is three, and then Clemson's four. I think it's what it's gonna be.
Yeah, I know. I'm Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson, right as you are. I think if anything, it's gonna be Ohio State above Notre Dame. More than like Ohio State's got a win against Indiana, and obviously they're going to step
right,
down.
But
Bama's got the win against Georgia.
If Ohio State like really destroyed Indiana, I'd be with you. But I don't think they can take, you know, for as much as we might believe that Ohio State would beat Notre Dame, which I think every warm-blooded American should believe this. I don't think they're going to put them over Notre Dame because Notre Dame has the win over number one Clemson. Trevor Lawrence wasn't playing. I get it, but I still think that that earns them number two in these first rankings, at least.
Right. It is tricky because of style points. I think style points will matter even more this year than they have in previous
years.
Okay. But I wrote about this for us on Monday. There isn't one good team. Like, obviously, Ohio State is good, Alabama is good, and Clemson is good, and Notre Dame is good. But you can look at all four and very easily say, that's how they'll lose, right? Like a couple years ago, Clemson, last year, LSU, it was very hard to look at those teams and be like, ah, they'll lose when X happens, you know what I mean? Nobody walked into LSU, Oklahoma in the semifinal and was like, you got to watch out for this. Like, no, there was a very clear dominant team. Right now, like, with the way Alabama's defense performed against Ole Miss, they've played better over the last couple weeks. I understand that the Ole Miss game was a while ago, but still, the talent they have in the defensive back seven there, Clemson's injuries on defense, as well as the question marks they have a wide receiver. Ohio State is going to just play cover one, cover three under Kerry Coombs, apparently, and never do anything else and just live and die by that. And Indiana was like, cool, we'll throw for 500 yards. We don't care. That's a problem. And then Notre Dame is probably your most complete team. And this is actually one of my, I'm just saying for today is Notre Dame is probably the most complete team in the country in terms of there's no like one significant austere, this is a problem for them. Like their wide receiver room is not great.
Yeah, but I feel like we often, now correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like we often confuse balanced with
right.
Complete.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Yeah. No, that's right. That was going to be my point, which is like, well, I am saying Notre Dame is the most complete team in the sense that they don't have one glaring weakness, but also like when you look at this team's strengths, right? It's having a talented defensive front seven, and that's good. And that they're able to suffocate some games because of that. And it's having a really, really strong offensive line, a really strong rushing attack. It's just not the model you want to have to be successful come college football playoff time. So I think they're balanced. I think they're complete. I think they're whole. And I also think if they catch Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, or other teams beyond those three on their best day, they're going to lose. Like, I think Notre Dame beats UNC this upcoming week. They're playing this Saturday. UNC is currently a four-point dog. And I think that because UNC can't stop the run at all. Notre Dame's just going to bully them out of the trenches. And I think it's going to be a massacre when Notre Dame is the football. And it's just going to be UNC trying to keep up for as long as possible in the passing game.
All right.
But UNC, it's still very, you know, within the realm of possibility they win this, because if Howell and Diami and Corrales and Daz Newsome and Javonte Williams, like if all these talented players, Michael Carter on offense are on, Notre Dame, they won that shootout against Clemson, but man, like it's not the way they're built to win football. It's scary.
It's crazy how quickly games just get away from you over the last 2 years. Like especially in 2020, offenses are so crazy right now, and defenses are, especially at the college level. When you're at the NFL level, at least you have pro players to throw out there and try to experiment about how to slow these offenses down. I know you're going up against pros on the other side, but there's at least a baseline. Like there's a floor to where, okay, I've got these guys because I could depend on them in certain ways. In college football, you've got such great talent discrepancies. I mean, look at the Kentucky game versus Alabama this past weekend. Kentucky was in a situation where they fumbled on the goal line and were about to score. Like at the 6-yard line, I think is where they fumbled. And they were about to score. They marched it down against Alabama. And if they would have scored that, it would have been 10-7 Kentucky 3 minutes into the second quarter. And even if you take Alabama's next series, which was a quick touchdown by them, it was a quick 60-yard drive for a touchdown. So then let's say the score is 14-10 Alabama. Kentucky then marched down again and had a field goal that they missed. Let's say they make that field goal. At that point, there's 5 minutes left in the half. And it is 14-13 Alabama. Ben, that game in reality ended 63-6.
Yeah.
It's just like if you fail at one time, a good offensive team will then boat race the crap out of you for the rest of the game.
Like, you know. Right. Now, okay. First, like, if onlys and just for candies and nuts every day would be Earth and Dog Fest. Right.
But,
like,
but right, that's, yeah. I'm not saying that Kentucky would have won the game, but I am saying that when you look at this final score of 63-6, and then you take it into situations and think that there was a not too far off reality where this game could have been 14-13 with 5 minutes left in the first half, it puts us in this wild, wild west kind of shootout every single week. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, you mentioned how vulnerable ND might be getting in a shootout against UNC and how, okay, Alabama's playing really well. And of course, they're the number one team in the country. But if you fast forward a couple of weeks, look, Florida can't cover anybody. Florida's defense has been terrible, especially to start games. But Florida can score a lot. And if one or two things go their way in a game against Alabama, this game, this SEC championship game could very well end 52-49, Florida wins. You know, it's just, we're at this point where every team that has a good offense can catch fire at any time. And I just think that if you don't have a good offense, you could be left in the dust, especially this year.
Right. And like, yeah, the issue is always going to be, but not always. The issue this year is going to be, we can measure out everything and talk about how these items interact and how we go back and forth. And then all of a sudden, Clemson gets a positive COVID test for Trevor Lawrence. Then it's DJ Uiagalelei against Notre Dame, and Notre Dame wins that game.
Nice first try there. That was good.
Yeah, it's no problem, Chief. No problem. We got, you know, we're looking at rising cases every single day. Like the holidays are coming. Like COVID has been a significant impact on college football. You know, I think realistically a prohibitive impact. Obviously, we're still playing the sport and doing what we can here on college football so far. It's only going to get worse. And by the time we get to college football playoff time, you're going to have, you know, these kids are going to be reaching the end, the extension. Like every week that they have to continue to go through protocols and continue to go through quarantine and try to be rigorous, it wears on you, right? And so that vigilance is tough. We might, every year, it comes down to who's the healthiest team. And this year, that's obviously compounded by the nature of the environment we're in. So you look and you say, oh, man, all of these teams have weaknesses at the top. And then also, these rosters could look really different by the time we actually get to January.
This is very
true
as well. And
that throws more things on it. So, you know, you're having a good quarterback and having a good head coach matters now more than ever.
It's also hilarious that Alabama got up on Kentucky so many points that they put in Bryce Young, their former number one dual threat quarterback recruit. And it's just like, y'all really are a factory, aren't you? Y'all already have a dude in the tank who's ready to take over for Mac Jones and just keep the dynasty going. Well, I didn't plan on that. We didn't plan on starting the show that way, but hopefully y'all enjoyed it. I got to read some ads now.
Ready to go.
Folks, this football season, it's going to be different. And Pepsi is here to get us ready for game day. No matter how we are watching this season, Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. Because Pepsi is not made for those who play the game. Oh, no. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. And while we're here, we might as well remind people that protecting their family is number one priority. But you want to do it safely. The people over at Axon Tasers, they believe that safer self-defense is better self-defense. Axon's line of non-lethal self-protection devices are small, lightweight enough to carry with you around in a glove compartment or a purse or something like that, yet they are powerful enough to incapacitate any kind of attacker. Guns carry unnecessary risk for you and those around you, and even pepper spray can harm you as much as your attacker at times, so it's often ineffective in that way. Axon Taser products are safe and they're easy to use. They use an electrical charge to immobilize attackers for up to 30 seconds, allowing you time to escape whatever situation you need to get away from, and it also sends an emergency dispatch signal to your GPS location. The Axon devices come loaded with features like laser-assisted targeting, the emergency dispatch that I talked about there, which can send a response immediately to wherever you are upon firing. Protect yourself and your family with Axon's line of smart self-defense products. Tasers are available without permit in most United States. So you can get the Taser Plus, Taser Strike Light, Taser Doc, whatever it is, over at Taser.com with the promo code NFL. So go over there, check it out, see all the products that they have. All right, now we can actually get into the scouting portion of the episode, which we were going to start with, but hey, here we are. We're having
transitions.
Fun. Listen, it's Tuesday. There's no rules. I don't know if that's a thing. Maybe there's just no rules on any day. I guess technically it's our podcast, so it's our rules. Who was your standout in scouting this weekend, Ben?
Yeah, so we both wrote a bunch of names down because we're irresponsible. I'm going to start...
Wait, irresponsible or responsible?
Irresponsible. We're supposed to only choose like one.
No, look, brother, it's a scouting podcast. The more names, the merrier. People are probably going to be like, wow, thank you for talking more than two podcasts and actually doing your job, you bumps!
Imagine doing our job. Ludicrous idea. Zion, Tupuola, Fatui.
I thought we were going with Williamson.
Edge, yeah. Well, he would have played Edge, and it would have been nuts, and we still wish we could have seen it. Edge, Washington. Boy, I don't... Firstly, they haven't played an outside linebacker at 280 pounds, which is objectively hilarious. It's like the classic, like,
280?
Washington... 280. Well, it's the classic Washington, like, all of our guys weigh somewhere between 265 and 285, and we put four of them on the field at once, and we just make up their positions. It's just big, long dudes, right?
Okay.
Through two games, he leads the Pac-12, four sacks, and leads the Pac-12 in TFLs, four TFLs. He has two forced fumbles on his four sacks against Oregon State and against Washington and Arizona. He can probably touch his kneecap standing up. His build is unbelievable. In terms of like 280, I think you're going to want to slim him down to like 265 and play him like as a true hand in the dirt five tech, 270. Because I think he can probably stand to chisel up and kind of redistribute his weight a little bit. But frame-wise, nuts. 6'3 with length. And he can... he can bend, and he can't bend that like good enough for that inflection, but for his size, the way that he rushes through a tight corner mm-hmm. with power using his hands is stupid. Just offensive. Like he's really good. He was a very low level recruit out of a small Hawaii school that doesn't get a ton of run. Washington was watching other guys, offensive linemen in the state of Hawaii going through it. And there's just this dude, number four at Pearl City High School. I know it's from Pearl City. I can't remember the name of his high school. And they're like, what's the recruiting book on this kid? And they went to find it and there was nothing. Just nobody knew he existed. No idea. And like, he was a four sport player in high school. Just insane all over the place, right? Played on both sides of the football.
What four do you know?
I know football, basketball.
Okay.
I don't know the other two. I'm imagining like track and field. And
I mean,
wrestling.
I was hoping we're looking at like fencing. And curling. would be the two that I'm really hoping. You know, curling, you've got to have great balance, great center of gravity, good core work. Fencing, all about being nimble on your feet. Good flexibility of your ankles. Quick wrist movement. Good form, good posture. I mean, all of this goes into great pass rushing. So, from this moment...
Prep volleyball standout.
Okay, good. Nice.
Yep. That, good. I'm into that.
I'm all about it.
Explosiveness, man. Vertical leap.
Was he a libera or something? Oh, God.
You're making up words now.
No. There's the term in volleyball where you have, at least this is in high school volleyball, I don't know if this is in college volleyball, you have like the one person who's wearing a different color jersey who can sub in like at any point in time. Like you don't have to have, it doesn't have to be a certain point in the game to where you can sub. Like they could just basically run onto the court at any time. Not like mid play.
It's like libera or something.
That's what I'm saying.
That.
It's like libera or something.
Okay, we have not talked about anything that's on the agenda for this podcast.
What are you talking about? I just said to you right there that when you reference edge rushers and their athletic backgrounds to me, I don't want to hear about basketball anymore, right? Stop being
volleyball.
I'm not talking to you specifically, but if you're a commentator out there, I don't want to hear about it. I want to hear about volleyball and what I just mentioned there with fencing. I want to know about ankle mobility and quick wrists. All right, go ahead.
Zion Tupuola-Fatui, 58. They had, obviously, guys moving around at edge. Joe Tryon, who we've talked about on this podcast previously, mm-hmm. electing to opt out this season and immediately go to the draft. Levi Nwuzurike, their interior rusher, doing the same. So they needed somebody to step up. Tupuola-Fatui has been a huge part of that. It's actually funny because when I was watching him play Oregon State in week one, I tweeted out, I was like, yo, this kid, ZTF 58, is nuts. And it immediately got a quote tweeted by Joe Tryon, who was like, yeah, he wrote his whole name out for me. He was like, yep, this guy. Like, just make it very clear for everybody who I was talking about, which I liked. So him, and then he's a redshirt sophomore. Washington's also got a off-ball linebacker. Ulofoshio. I do not know how to say it. He's an Alaskan. He, I think, is a true sophomore, but he's like 6'2", 30 with vines, and he can run. So that 48 and 58 have been the two guys for me watching Washington, besides like Elijah Molden and the players we already knew about, really standing out. Jimmy Lake defense, unsurprisingly, has been pretty suffocating through 2 weeks. I don't think Ulofoshio is eligible yet. I might be wrong on that, but Tupuola-Fatui is the one to me who we're going to get to February, and we're going to get that Peter Schrager, Tom Pelissero, you know, NFL guy with connections tweet that's just like a player that guys are really, NFL's really liking on day two, mm-hmm. Washington edge, Zion Tupuola-Fatui. He's an impressive player.
Yeah. Look, Washington, if you're doing any level of scouting, I guess, out there, you always have to keep an eye on Washington and what they have going on, especially on the defensive side of the football, because they do some weird stuff. They do some crazy things, but every now and then they will get a player or a couple of players who, within their craziness of their defensive system, you go, whoa, 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 hold on. This dude can play. And so never brush off what's going on over in the Pacific Northwest. They have some interesting prospects I don't want to say every year, but it feels like at least every other year. You've really always got to keep your eye on Washington. First two guys that I want to talk about is my standouts in scouting. Indiana. Michael Penix Jr. and Ty Freifogel. That is the quarterback and the wide receiver duo for Indiana. Obviously, Indiana is having an incredible season. Almost completed a comeback against Ohio State, but fell just short. Learn a lot of different storylines with their coach Tom Allen, who's got a crazy theme that they're all kind of embracing, and that story of that Indiana program this year has been a lot of fun to follow. But the biggest storyline to me is sophomore quarterback Michael Penix Jr. You have brought him up.
Oh man, if only someone, Trevor. Oh, I'm going to kick back and let you talk. I'm just going to smirk. You do your thing, brother.
You have brought him up on this very podcast, talking about what he can do. Dude's got a hose, man. The dude's got a cannon, and he is a redshirt sophomore. Okay, so he is technically, draft eligible. I don't think he is going to go into the draft, but with him being 3 years removed from high school, he could technically leave if he wanted. He suffered a torn ACL in his redshirt freshman season in 2018, started in six games in 2019, and then really just has kind of exploded onto the scene with what he's able to do, especially from his physical gifts. He's 6'3", 215. He's more of a skinny player, but he's got these long limbs, and he's just got a cannon for an arm. When I watch him and kind of how that ball just fires off of that long arm, I feel like I'm watching Colin Kaepernick at times, because that's what I felt like I was seeing with Kaepernick, and with the escapability, his ability to move around the pocket, his ability to run.
Don't hate that.
His ability to really just like fight. I mean, there were a couple of plays where it looked like, I don't want to say he's flicking his wrist. He wasn't Michael Vick in it or Lamar Jacksoning it, but he was just putting his arm into it and flying that thing 55 yards down the field in the back of the end zone. Especially in that deep touchdown where he kind of had to ad lib a little bit, get out of the pocket, buy some time, and then wasn't really even on platform when he let that bad boy go. That was to Freifogel in the back of the end zone. He just had so many of those plays against Ohio State, and he stuffed the stats, but when you watch his tape, that's who he reminded me of. He reminded me of Colin Kaepernick. And Kaepernick, when he was at Nevada, the same colors, sorry, sue me. There were parts of his game where you went, man, this guy's got all the physical tools. He's not quite there yet. And then that night, not quite there yet, became a quite there now when he was playing for Harbaugh in San Francisco with Greg Roman as the offensive coordinator, and they really figured it out, and they were able to tool a lot of what they were doing around his unique athletic gifts, and they made a Super Bowl team out of it. They made a Super Bowl run with Kaepernick there, and he turned into quite the weapon in the NFL. And when I see the football ability, I saw flashes of Kaepernick when I was watching Michael Penix Jr. play.
Yeah, Kaepernick's bigger. Release is different. I think one of the things that's impressive about Penix for me is that he's able to get his release is not compact. It's not efficient, but he whips it through really quick. And I think that Kaepernick had
obviously that's fair.
Yeah. But like, if we're talking about that kind of gangly movement style,
right?
That was where it really got me. And then also obviously arm talent. That was kind of immediately clicked for me. But yeah, like with Penix, I think
Penix, by the way. I'm pretty sure it's Penix. Yes.
Penix with Michael. By the way, Spencer Hall, who obviously works with your Alyssa on, I'm so embarrassed. I can't remember the name of the show now.
Thinking Out Loud. I was going to let you sweat, but I could see
TOL like in my mind's eye, but I couldn't remember the name. He posted a TikTok where it was, instead he was singing "It's the Legend of the Phoenix."
Oh, went, yeah.
"It's the Legend of Mike Phoenix," and I was laughing at 1 a.m.
It's not like, Phoenix, it's Penix.
Yeah, so I think that's where he got me. But anyways, Mike Penix. I don't like, even at the peak, I don't think we're looking at a starting caliber NFL quarterback, but we know how much mobility matters. We know how much arm talent matters, right, especially when it comes to development.
Right.
He is very clearly. And the thing is, you know, like, oh, it's just because Indiana's good. No. Like, no, like, he is a four-star recruit, and Indiana's been trying to get him as a starter for ages now. And it's just been issues with health. This is now, you know, if he's healthy, this is what was expected of him. He was an NFL caliber player when they brought him in. And so it's nice to see him, you know, deliver on that. He's a ton of fun, man.
Yeah, the other guy is the guy on the other end of a lot of those rocket passes, and that is senior wide receiver Ty Freifogel.
He
wears number 3 for him. You know, I think a lot of people are going to remember the missed fourth down catch, the easy one that he had early in the game that really had Indiana a chance to continue to move the ball and put up some points early on against Ohio State. But outside of that, it's been a great season for him. And as I was kind of going back and watching a couple more of his games, he's a contested catch guy. He's not going to break away from you and have that natural separation, whether it is due to elite quickness or elite long speed. But I think he has become very comfortable with what his identity is as a contested catch receiver this year. And he's got a lot of confidence in it. And we just saw, you know, especially against Sean Wade in Ohio State this past weekend, like he was bodying Sean Wade, man. He was going up for catches, and it wasn't just Wade. It was kind of a lot of different Ohio State corners that he was really showing his stuff to. And so athletic ceiling means that he's probably not going to be talked about at the top end of what is a really talented wide receiver class. But in terms of those mid-round guys, and I love bringing up these names, these players that I think fans are going to attach to, gravitate towards when the later rounds show up and when training camp rolls around and things like that. These players that initially in their careers might be on a practice squad, but also might fill out the back end of that roster. I think Ty Freifogel's a guy who's a player who you could really keep an eye on as one of those players, because he's starting to be really confident in what he has and his abilities. And I think that we're seeing that this year on the other end of a lot of those Penix throws.
Dude, there's nothing funnier to me than being able to, not necessarily being able to find, but seeing who those players end up that are the guys that every user of the MDM, of the mock draft machine, tries to get in the fourth round.
Right.
And that's like when you talk about a player like Freifogel, who's just, okay, athletically, you know, not necessarily going to break the combine or anything, but he's just clearly a good contested catch guy, good concentration, good hands. He's playing outside of his mind the last couple of weeks. That's always like contested. Like it was Colin Johnson last year. And like Colin Johnson, like he's stuck on the Jags roster. Like he's wide receiver 4 or 5, but he's there. And it's just like, listen, I know he's huge and I know I've seen him make 6 spectacular catches and I want him on my team. And yeah, sometimes that's how it goes, man.
Really is. The last guy from that game that I want to shout out, Pete Warner, the linebacker from Ohio State. We had some people talking to us this summer who were saying like, oh, you know, like y'all got to watch Pete Warner for the summer scouting, and you and I both watched him, and there are things to like, but I think that he just seemed limited in what he was able to do. Mm-hmm. Again, this is another guy who, another year in the system, he's playing very confident. Tough Borland is as well, and also Baron Browning was playing really confident. He was playing fast, and that was the guy I was most intrigued about in that linebacker group when we were doing summer scouting, was Browning, because he clearly showed the flashes of having a higher athletic ceiling than guys like Warner and Tough Borland. But Warner and Borland were so much further along than Browning was in knowing where they needed to be, anticipating where the ball was going, being solid in run fits, being solid in coverage, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Browning is now taking steps towards becoming that, and he's playing even faster than he was last year. And so wanted to shout out Pete Warner, but honestly, all three of those linebackers from Ohio State, if you believed in them and if you were honest with like what their ceilings were and what their prototypes were as prospects, you've got to be pretty pleased with all three of how well all three of these guys are playing so far this year.
Yeah, I continue to be worried about the aggregate of Werner and Browning and Borland in coverage, because I think your best cover defender there is Browning. And at times Browning, we saw this happen against Indiana, is just like, hey, what was the play call? Like they were in man and Browning was like, I'm playing zone. And it was like, no, buddy. Like, yeah. Like, so there are still times where he makes plays and makes mistakes. And that's kind of always been the book on him. So that's, and there's that, and then obviously Ohio State's got big problems in the secondary. You know, Wade's not playing great ball on the outside. Seven Banks, he's really talented, but he's just not sticky right now. Marcus Hooker, younger brother of Malik Hooker, is their free safety. Oh, no. He's really struggling in his first year starting. So they alluded to, and I wrote about this a little bit more, they just, Kerry Coombs is like, we're just going to out-athlete you. Cover one, cover three, man zone, bang, single high, that's how we're going to do it. And Indiana was like, listen, we've got an NFL caliber quarterback and two like NFL wide receivers in Watt Fillier and Ty Freifogel. Deal. And I mean, Michael Penix, what was stunning was the stat PFF
Penix
put out. Penix, frick. What was stunning was the stat the PFF put out. I mean, it's 100% mentally stuck in my head now. Penix. The stat the PFF put out after the game, which was that Penix has the most passing yards under pressure against Ohio State or in any game in college that they've ever charted. And when you go back and you watch why, it's because Indiana couldn't block Ohio State's defensive line at all. Defensive line's so talented in Ohio State. Well, but when you know the coverage you're getting, you got a smart quarterback with an arm that can reach downfield, doesn't matter. You just release the football first read, have your guys go make a play. Last guy I want to bring up, because we've talked about him on this podcast a fair bit, so I think it's important that we give him his day, Rondale Moore. the wide receiver from Purdue, your boy, my boy, slightly less so, but still my boy, who has missed the first three games of the season for the Boilermakers, made his season debut on Friday night against Minnesota. Didn't really, there was no, he had a lower leg injury. You know, there's no kind of elaboration on more and why he was out and why he came back for this game, what have you. However, 15 catches, 116 yards. Three carries, 20 yards, and a touchdown. So all-purpose, we put together 136-yard night and a score on 18 touches. More, if he was banged up lower body, it didn't seem to me on a first glance evident. I mean, it's been a hot second since I watched more, you know, his film from 2019 or even from 2018 when he was at his healthiest. I didn't see a slower player. I didn't see a less agile player. I didn't see a less explosive player. He looked great. Survived contact nicely. He has always been a little bit of like an avoid contact guy, so he wasn't like going for hits on the sideline. So I don't know if maybe that was it. But anyway, he came out and was immediately huge part of the offense and extremely productive. Looked like the guy that we were confident would be drafted in the first round. So, you know, Purdue's got another four games probably. Rutgers, Nebraska, IU, and then the Big Ten championship weekend. Be healthy for all four. Look like that for all four. It's gonna be a lot easier to kind of get over whatever it was that kept you out of the first four games of the season, narrative-wise, when we get to the NFL draft.
Yeah, I did not catch any of that game live, so I was only able to watch kind of like the highlights, and I saw a bunch of Rondale's catches, and if I'm going to be honest, like, I thought he looked kind of stiff. Like, I thought that he clearly was either coming back from something or something was still bothering him. I felt like he was a little bit stiff, and maybe it was just the fact that it was his first game out there, but I am obviously excited that he is back. had a hell of a first day, whether he was a little stiff and getting warm into the season or not, obviously put up the stats. So I'm with you. I hope that we get a lot more games of him and as many as possible this year, because it's going to be a tough evaluation through this entire wide receiver class, because there's a lot of really great guys, and he's not the last guy that we're talking about today even. But before I get to the last couple of guys that I wanted to bring up, got to talk to the people about Built Go. We've all got those walls that we hit at some point in the day. For some people, it's right when they wake up, or it could be right in the middle of the day, right before a workout, something like that, where you're just like, man, I need some more energy. I need some more help throughout the day. Built Go, which is the same company that makes the Built Bar protein bars, they now make these little energy packs called Built Go. They're these little ounce and a half gels that you can just pop in, and it's instant healthy energy right for you. They got three delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate mint. They're great for you. The nutrients in them are just as good as what you would see from a Built Bar protein bar. You visit BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED, all caps LOCKED. You'll get 20% off your next order. So if you are somebody who drinks more energy drinks than you wish, drinks an extra cup of coffee when you know you don't need it, try this form of energy instead. I think it'll be a little bit better for you. You're going to enjoy it more. It's going to be healthier on your body. Use the promo code LOCK, 20% off, BuiltGo.com. I wanted to talk about three running backs as standout guys. I brought up Gary Brightwell last week, the Arizona running back, and I've got three more running backs that I wanted to talk about. One more, a little bit more in-depthly, and then two more that I kind of just wanted to shout out. First one is Ramondre Stevenson, the running back from
Oklahoma.
And I read about Ramondre Stevenson before this Bedlam game between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. He is 6 foot, 6 foot one-ish, right in the middle. 245 pounds.
Dense.
My guy is a tank. And dense. I'm like, I'm over here. Like, I saw a highlight film of him. And one, he wears number 29. So fantastic big man bruiser number. You know what I'm saying? Like, we talk about number aesthetics a lot on this podcast. 29. I feel like is a great
LeGarrette Blunt, baby. He's got the dreads. He's got 29. Number. He's got the build.
Yeah. A lot of times. So like sometimes we'll go, okay, if you're a bruiser back, you got to be in the 30s. You got to be either like 31, 32, 34. You know, like those are good bruiser backs. But 29 too. Don't sleep on 29 as a bruiser number. Okay, so obviously he's a big dude. He's got better straight line speed than you would think for this kind of player, which gives him more versatility as opposed to being just a short yardage third and one or goal line kind of a back. He's a guy that Oklahoma puts in a lot of different situations. And this past weekend, he had 26 carries for 141 yards. Now, he's got an interesting story, okay? You talk about this guy being a massive man in the backfield. He's got a lot of speed, especially when he gets a full head of steam with him. He can bounce off tackles. He's got a great center of gravity. So it's like, okay, how are we not hearing of this guy? Because he is a senior. He's a senior running back this year. So his story is, in high school, he had a metric crap ton of production.
I wasn't ready for it.
His junior year, he had over 1,400 rushing yards, 19 touchdowns on just 191 carries during his junior year of high school. But then his senior year, he broke his foot. And from the stories and the background digging that I was reading with him, is when he broke his foot, he kind of like didn't have a big motivation to keep up his grades. And because of that, when football was kind of no longer a thing for them, he really slipped in school, and his grades came to a point where he was a four-star recruit running back, and he ended up not being eligible to go anywhere. So he took an entire year off of school after his senior year of high school, got to a point where he entered in junior college, played a couple of years JUCO ball. His JUCO coach ended up saying that if he would have stayed 4 years instead of the 2 years that he was with us, he would have shattered every California JUCO record that there was. Had a lot of really good production, ended up getting his grades right, transfers over to Oklahoma, where he played for the first time last year, but then had a suspension that kept him out of the Peach Bowl, also had a suspension that kept him out a little bit this year. And so there's just been a lot of things that he has dealt with. But now we're to the point where he is the starting running back for the Oklahoma Sooners. Now, he's not as used in the pass game, but he is clearly a guy that they lean on for a lot of production. 26 carries in a single game against a rival. I mean, you've got to have the trust of the coaching staff if that's the case. And so he's not the most dynamic guy when they go to those obvious passing situations, but huge player, massive human being, is a bulldozer when you try to tackle him. And he gives you a little bit more straight line speed than you would think. Of course, he doesn't have as much wiggle as a guy who is 5'10", buck 95 or something like that. But was really intrigued by him as a mid-round, maybe late-round running back, as a real workhorse kind of a player.
Did you see his game against Texas Tech this year?
Yeah, I think that was one of the games that I watched after I saw that probably in like a compilation thing where I was just like, okay, right. Who is this dude? So no, I did not watch it start to finish.
I think he had 9 rushing touchdowns. It might've been less. But after one of them, and it wasn't even the first one, I think it was the second or the third one. It was his first game back from suspension, and he scores and he just gets up and he picks up the shirt and he's got written on the undershirt, "I'm back." And so it's just 240-pound stacked running back with the entire Oklahoma offensive line behind him in the end zone with "I'm back" written on the undershirt. And it was just like, yeah, I'm in on Ramondre Stevenson.
He's just very intriguing. You know, he's a player who I don't think he's going for the RB1 title. But, you know, like you said, when you get into the mock draft machine and you get to some of those middle rounds, right, and you want to kind of fill out your team in a certain way, he's a player you're looking for. The other two guys that I wanted to mention, C.J. Verdell and Dimitri Fenton, the running backs from Oregon and UCLA that played this past weekend. Verdell is so consistent, man. And I talked earlier about those guys that fans love that are in training camp that you just can't quit. They're bouncing around teams and they're always going to be given chances. That's C.J. Verdell to me. And I don't know if he's going to end up being a journeyman. Heck, maybe the team that drafts him loves him enough keep him around and he'll be there for a couple of years and work his way up the depth chart.
He can return, you know, yeah.
Right. I think of... This isn't the exact same situation, but similar to like what Peyton Barber was for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Barber was kind of an afterthought. He was deep on the depth chart, practice squad kind of a player, and just stuck around, worked really hard. Coaching staff never wanted to get rid of him. And as the years went on, he went from RB4 to RB3, then RB3 to RB2. Then all of a sudden he was splitting time. And then there was one year where he entered the year as the starting running back. And so like I see that from C.J. Verdell. And the first play on the UCLA tape that I even watched to watch these two guys and the rest of the prospects there too, Verdell was fearlessly picking up an incoming free blitzer off the edge and just smacked him.
Verdell's dense in his own way, right? He's like 5'10", 215, right?
Yes.
Like he's a well-built young man.
And that play, as much as I like CJ Verdell as a runner as well, I think he is consistent there for what he is, you know, given his athletic ceiling. He will work to do pass protection. He will do a lot of dirty work stuff, and that's what makes me think that he's going to stick around in the league. He's going to be a guy that fans love. And then Demetric Fenton, he is a scat back, and he had a lot of production this past weekend. He had, let me look here, 34 carries, 167 yards, 2 touchdowns, and he's quick, man. He is a quick little back there, and so he's another player. Late rounds of this draft, if you're looking for a guy to really help out in the passing game, a third down kind of a back, could be a guy that you're targeting.
Yeah, no, Demetric Felton's got that Curtis Samuel vibe. Is he a wide receiver? Is he a running back?
Ooh, yeah, sure.
I don't know, but just get him the ball somehow, right? And like with an increase league-wide usage on things like jet motion and quick touches, right, reverse touches, we see wide receiver runs are at a peak this year over the last 10, 15 years. Those players can have more clearly defined roles, despite the fact that you don't know whether to call them running back or wide receiver, right? Like Tyler Irvin is a running back on the Packers depth chart. He lines up at slot receiver more than he does in the backfield, right? You know, it's just like that sort of a guy. Felton could be a playmaker for you there.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Did you have anybody else you wanted to talk about for standout scouting?
I had other running backs down as well. Jamar Jefferson is really good for Oregon State. Nobody watches him because he plays at 10:30 at night, but he's awesome. I think he's a potential top five back in the class.
Oh, okay.
CJ Marable, who's the kid for Coastal Carolina, which if you haven't gotten a chance if you haven't gotten a chance to watch Coastal Carolina, man, top 15 ranked, just beat Appalachian State for the first time since they started their program. I believe this is the best start of a Sun Belt team in the last X number of years. It's a really, really impressive program they've got. Freshman quarterback Graham McCall is going to be a guy that I think we talk about in the future. But currently on offense, their best prospect is senior running back CJ Marable, 5'10", 205. Against Appalachian State, he had 5 carries. And Ben, 5 carries for a draft-eligible running back? Yeah. 3 receptions for 9 yards. He actually had an explosive reception. It was like a 20-yard catch, but then he lost some on other receptions for a touchdown. He was ripping off when he was able to get those explosive plays. You see him in space, you get to understand why he's desirable for the league, right? And I think that the same model of Verdell, dense dude, can be a return guy for you, can be on the field for all 3 downs. I don't think he's as talented as Verdell is, but Marable's, I would encourage everybody to watch our Chanticleers, Coast Carolina, Teal Field.
Yeah, they do have that teal field.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're looking at it from a scouting perspective, number one in the backfield's your dude. He's a lot of fun.
Jamie Chadwell, the head coach there. People talked about him potentially making the jump over to the open head coach spot at University of South Carolina. Like, that's how well he has that team play.
There's no offense in college football that's more fun, which there's probably ones that are more effective. But there's none that are more fun. And to me, that matters.
Listen, Gamecocks need a lot of fun. You know, like after the last couple of years of watching.
Imagine going from the Chanticleers to the Gamecocks. Just pugnacious foul to further pugnacious foul. You'll love to see it.
All right, let's do our best things we saw this week. And then we'll get to a thick boy and then we'll get out of here.
Best thing I saw this week. We talked last week about Liberty beating Virginia Tech on a ridiculous Justin Fuente coaching gaffe that allowed them a game-winning field goal. Well, then the Flames got NC State this week, a game that somebody may have bet on the Flames winning. It doesn't matter. They're down 14-15, and yes, there was a safety. There was a, you know, there was a touchdown with a missed extra point. There was a lot of nonsense. They're down 14-15, 4 minutes left. Got the ball, 2 timeouts, I want to say they have. Malik Willis, their quarterback, who to me is a fringe NFLer. He's shown in previous games that Liberty's won. They're since undefeated 8-0 to this point. This is his situation. They drive it down the field, multiple third down conversions. They get it all the way into the 26-yard line, 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. You know what they start doing, Trev? They start playing for the field goal. Got a kicker, Alex Barbier, previous thick boy of the week, who they say, hey, he would hit a game winner for us from distance, Virginia Tech. We're going to play for the field goal. So they run the football, get a timeout from NC State. Third and 6, run it again. They got Malik Willis, one of the best dual threat quarterbacks in college football. And they're going to take the ball out of his hand, hand it off. Timeout. 4th and 5 from the 21. Minute 18 left, down by 1. Alex Barbier onto the field. Blocked. Ball game. They end up getting the ball. The game logging is completely incorrect. It's just trying to go through all the stuff that happened after the field goal. But they play for the field goal. Trev.
You never play
for the field goal.
Never play Cincinnati, for the field goal.
Cincinnati was up by 3.
Coward stuff.
On UCF. Got the ball down to the 1-yard line with 2 minutes left. Jarrett Doakes, their running back, takes a knee at the 1 so that they can snap it and run for no gain, snap it, run for no gain, snap it, run for no gain. Guess what happens on 4th and 1 when they're up by 3, Trevor?
Tell us, Ben.
Snap this ball with 2 seconds left. Bad snap. Fumble. Desmond Ridder falls on it. If he was a half second later, UCF scoop and scoring that to win. Also lost money on that game. Moral of the story, stop. Like, yes, it is smart to play for the last possession, but there is a water's edge, and the water's edge is college kickers and also shotgun snaps at the 1-yard line with 2 seconds left. At that point, you have jumped the shark and you're being too smart for your own good. Just score the points. It's going to be okay.
My best thing that I saw this week, in an Alabama offense that featured Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Waddle, Tua Tagovailoa, two of those wide receivers left early. It was Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy. Tua Tagovailoa obviously left as well. One of them couldn't leave because he was just a true sophomore, and that was Jalen Waddle. But the third player there, Devontae Smith, could have left last year, but he didn't. And he's talked about how he really wanted to solidify himself as a first-round pick. That's what he wanted to do with coming back because, you know, he had the incredible moment. If you remember, it was Devontae Smith who was on the other end of Tua Tagovailoa's miraculous touchdown throw to beat Georgia to win the national championship a couple of years ago when Tua first burst onto the scene in that game. Devontae Smith has had the moment. He's had the championships. He's had the stats even. But he didn't leave because he wanted to come back. He wanted to continue to accomplish things, prove that he was a first-round wide receiver, and it's hard to argue that he has done anything other than that. I mentioned this, and I gave him a shout-out, I think, a couple of weeks ago when we were kind of doing this segment. But last week, he passed Amari Cooper and Chris Doering for the most career receiving touchdowns in SEC history. So now he is number one there. He gets that honor. And for Devontae Smith to return when he really didn't need to, it's really cool that he gets that honor. It's cool that he gets to exit college football then with, a record that, if he keeps adding to it, could very well get to 40. You know, he's, I think, less than 500 receiving yards away from Amari Cooper's career yardage record at Alabama. Like, he could genuinely leave just the most accomplished wide receiver in Alabama history, which is saying a lot. And in the process, I think that a lot of people are now talking about Devontae Smith as not just a first-round wide receiver, but a top 20 wide receiver, and even a guy that you could pick around top 10, late part of the top 10, right outside of that. I've heard people bring that up as well. And so wanted to just big shout out to Devontae Smith, because after the game as well, they did an interview with him, and he's not a man of many words, at least not to the media. He's not. He's just very kind of soft-spoken, direct, not a lot of flash to what he says, but there's a lot of flash to his game and a lot of things that you love. And so you could just tell in his interview and how he was handling the accomplishment that this is just something that he's worked for. And he with that kind of mindset, he deserves this honor. So I wanted to give him a big shout out.
I'm dreading the Devonta Smith draft conversations that are going to happen in February. I just can't.
We've already had it.
So
we've
bad.
Already had it.
You and I have.
I know.
The masses. The national eye is not yet turned to the extremely good 175-pound wide receiver and all the problems that that's going to cause.
That's why this is the only podcast you need to listen to.
Exactly. We're just going to do the conversations for you and don't listen to anybody else.
Thick boy, let's talk about it.
Talked about him previously as a standout in scouting. Defensive tackle, Iowa. Davion Nixon.
Thick.
Yeah, a healthy dude, extremely talented. It's been impressive. You know, like we talked about him a few weeks ago for Iowa. Since then, he's been pretty good. playing Penn State. I don't know if you heard, Penn State's turning over the football occasionally this year. It's a big part of their offensive strategy is to just regularly give up the football.
It has not worked out for them.
Yeah. I don't know why they've decided this is their route, but they're 0-5, and that's kind of how that goes. Nixon lined up as the three tech. Iowa's coming with an interior pressure, so they're bringing both linebackers through the A-gap. Nixon's going to widen out, take the running back if he releases, and if he doesn't, he's going to sink to the flat. Not the responsibility you want your 310-pound defensive tackle to be in, typically, but you're going to put him there because that's how you're going to get the simulated pressure. So Nixon slinks out, running back, all right, there he releases. I go to the flat, look to the quarterback, ball's coming out, leap, 6-inch vert, maybe 7. It's enough, though. He's got some good length.
Yep.
Tap the ball to himself, catch
it
now. The right tackle is still free because no, he didn't block anybody because of the way the pressure worked, and the quarterback's still free, and Sean Clifford can run. So this is Nixon now, 1v2, 70 yards to go.
Never tell me the odds.
It's worth noting, this is a two-possession game, 2 minutes left. Penn State wasn't going to win, but like this is the dagger potential play. So Nixon picks that thing off. He opens the stride, baby. He knows. Like, if I'm going to win this against the offensive tackle, it's going to be in the first 10, 15 yards. And he does. He clears the tackle. Just Sean Clifford is left. Trevor, with the grace of the mighty beluga, all right? Like a bison rounding a corner to come back on a stampede, right? Mm-hmm. Like a bull with a matador in his sights. Nixon, firstly, does the little, like, high leg jump, you know, high step, oh, what am I going to change direction thing, which is unbelievable confidence levels.
Yeah.
If you try that and got, like, let alone get tackled, God forbid you, like, fall on your face, the locker room will not let you forget that. You could win the defensive Heisman. Locker room would be like, you remember that one time you tried to high step on Sean Clifford and ate dirt? So firstly, just fly directly close to the sun. So he does the little like high step, puts that foot in the ground, little swim move over Sean Clifford, basically starting a pass rush move, gets to the backside of Clifford, and it's open grass. He's gone. Like it's a little bit too liberal to say that he juked out Sean Clifford, but he absolutely
we're here for it.
Juked out Sean Clifford.
Nah, we're here for it.
I have never seen such grace.
He juked out James Franklin out of his coaching position. That's what he did. He took it a step further.
Dude, oh man. I mean, like, obviously, this is not a way to scout a player at all, but I want Davion Nixon to stay in school, go to his senior year, declare, get in the Senior Bowl, and on Senior Bowl media day, I'll walk right up to him and be like, break down for me high-stepping on Sean Clifford.
Yeah, remember that time you high-stepped Sean Clifford?
It's the heat check of a generation. It's really the little step that gets me. And then he just slinks right across a little bit of bend. Clifford eats air. Like, he doesn't get a paw on him. Throws the swim move, switches the ball hand-to-hand. Like, David Nixon knows what he's doing. So, 70-yard pick six, dagger for Iowa. Damian Nixon's a legit prospect, but he's also Thick Boy of the Week.
He did the basketball move where you're like, you're driving into the lane, you got the ball low, and somebody goes to steal it, and then you just like circle it straight over him as you get into your power stance, and then right for the layup. That's what he did.
Right, and switched it through the little, you know, he had the hand following in case Clifford was there, knocked that away. He talked about it after the game. And like, cause he was asked about it, and he said, "Yeah, I tried him with a Euro step." So I'll read the quote for you after I finish this survey, so that I have access to the question. I have access to the piece.
How many hours of sleep do you get a night from the survey?
Right. Next to me down the sideline, Clifford met him at midfield. 6'3", 305-pounder, began to high step with the football. My first thought was run through the quarterback. But I saw the right tackle was closer to me, so I was like, I've got to go score. When I had the ball in my hands, the first thing I want to do is put it in the end zone. So that's what I did, which is a hilarious thing to say, because when I get the ball in my hands, well, it's like the second or third time you've got this.
Nah, he dreamed about it. He dreams about it every night.
Yeah. First TD ever, and he was asked, like, was your first TD ever? And he said, yeah. When I was younger, I used to play for the North Chicago Flames in Lake County, Illinois. I had the ball one time when I was like 5 or 6, but I only had like a 5-yard gain. And that was the last time that Davion Nixon had the opportunity to score. So he wasn't going to mess this one up.
Truly incredible. That was a Thick Boy play of the week for the ages.
Yeah. With that, it's always nice when you know right away.
Oh, and we saw that play, and we were like,
we don't need to see any more football this
100%.
Week.
I saw everybody freaking out about it, and I sent Ben that link immediately because I was like, we're not forgetting this because we need to give this man his dues. That's the Tuesday College Football Podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed a little bit more of the standout and scouting talk than we had kind of breaking down the college football landscape. If you enjoyed it, let us know. We'll do it more often because this is a podcast of the people. Tomorrow we take a lot of what we talked about today, a lot of what we talked about in yesterday's podcast, and we're going to do a full first round mock draft. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.